The test is in four parts, part 1, part 2, part 3, and part 4. Now look at part 1.
Part 1.
George and Lisa are overseas students studying in Britain. They are returning home for the summer holidays.
First, you have some time to look at questions 1 to 3.
That'll be $23. Right, there's your change. Have a nice trip. Oh, I'll just get your bags out of the boot.
Thank you very much. Now, George, let's find the check-in desk.
Yes, but with all the changes they have made here at the airport, I'm not sure where the check-in desk is.
I know, it's strange, isn't it? Why don't we ask for help?
Good idea. What about that man sitting down over there?
Which one? The one with the hat on and in the trolley?
No, the one with the uniform behind the table. I'll ask him. Excuse me, could you tell me where the check-in desk for France Air is, please?
Let me think. The best way to get there would be to turn left at the end there, where the cafe is, and then go straight ahead until you're opposite the departure gate's entrance.
Sorry. It might be quicker to turn right as soon as you get past the cafe, and keep going along the corridor until you come to the sliding doors at the end. On the left. Yes, that's it. All the check-in counters are in a hall there. I'm pretty sure France Air is directly to your left as you walk in the hall.
Thanks a lot. So, it's the left past the cafe, and then right opposite...
the bookshop. You can't miss it. Come on then, Lisa. We don't want to be late, and I want some time to get a cup of coffee and look around the bookshop.
Okay, George, but I want to go to the restroom first. I'll meet you at the check-in desk.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 4 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 4 to 10.
Good morning. Can I help you?
Yes, I would like to check in for flight FA-492.
Very good. Can I have your ticket and passport, please?
Oh, yes, here you are.
Okay, thanks. If you could just put your suitcase on the scales.
Oh, I have this extra box that I want to take as well.
Okay, well... that's extra luggage, so I'll have to get you to fill out an excess baggage declaration certificate. It'll cost extra, I'm afraid. Let me see. $40 exactly, if the total value of your contents is under $400.
Oh, well, what's the form for?
It's just a form you have to fill out, so that if there are any problems, we'll know where you are and how to contact you. So, if you can give me a few details, I'll key in the information. Okay, then. Your passport says your name is Lavier. Is that right?
Yes, George Lavier.
George, L-A-V-I-L-L-I-E-R-S. Good. Now, nationality. French? No, wait a minute. It's a Swiss passport.
Well, yes, I live in France, but I was born in Switzerland.
Swiss. Very good. Flight number... FA-492, destination is...
Paris.
Are you connecting with any other flight in Paris, or will you be staying there?
I'm spending my vacation in Paris. Well, Sèvres, just outside Paris.
Okay. So what's the phone number there?
Let me think. The country code for France is 33, and the number is 1-9861-4537.
Right, so that's 331-9861-4537.
Yes, that's it.
And can you tell me briefly what you have in the box?
Well, there are some books, just university textbooks from last semester. Some clothes, and, my computer disks.
Okay, thank you. And what would be the approximate value of the contents?
Quite a bit, actually. About $150.
That's all. There's your receipt for the books, your passport and ticket, and here is your boarding pass. Gate 7. You can board the plane in about 35 minutes. Have a nice flight.
That is the end of part 1.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part 2.
Part 2.
You will hear two students talking about a school project.
First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
Hi, Lynn. How's your project coming along?
Oh, not very well. I've got all the information, but I can't seem to organise it into a presentation.
Well, you'd better hurry. You only have one more week.
Yes, that's okay. It's just that... Oh.
Well, why don't you try your presentation on me? Maybe I can help.
Oh, really? Great. Okay, well, I've chosen solar power for my subject, and I'm going to talk specifically about domestic water heating. You know, like the ones popular in America. I've got some facts here.
Oh, that's good. But just start your presentation from the beginning.
Oh, right. Well, here we go then. There are many reasons why we should be looking elsewhere for energy sources. As most people are aware, fossil fuels and other such non-renewable sources are by definition finite, so something needs to be in operation soon. Currently, there are a number of alternative energy sources available which can, with a little preparation, be used to provide for a significant part of our domestic energy requirements. In this presentation, I am focusing on solar power and its application as a domestic water heater. As a renewable energy source, solar power is in many ways ideal. The amount of the sun's energy which reaches the earth every minute exceeds the energy that the global population consumes in a year. Although scientists argue that it is not finite, sunlight is certainly a long-lasting resource which is not depleted through use, and solar power converters use this energy without needing any complex moving parts. Once collected and stored, solar energy can be used for many purposes, but it is becoming increasingly popular as a domestic heating source. Generally, a building that is heated by solar power will have its water heated by solar power as well, and this has even worked in areas that are not exposed to long hours of direct sunlight, such as the United Kingdom, although not so well as in warmer climates.
Why have you stopped?
Well, that's all I've got so far.
Oh, well, start by talking about how effective it is.
Oh, okay. Well, there are a number of factors that influence how efficient solar power can be. The first, obviously, is the amount of sunlight, and this is dependent on season, time of day, and climate. Although the UK has something of a bad reputation for sunshine, it is actually quite productive during some parts of the year. Given a sufficient size of solar panel and water storage tank, solar power can provide all of our water heating requirements in June and July, and even provide the majority until October. From October to the end of the year, this figure falls dramatically. December is the least productive, being able to supply less than 5% of the average household's hot water requirement. It is at this point that solar power needs to be supplemented with a more traditional form of heating. From January, solar power becomes more effective at a rate of about 20% per month, although this rise decelerates to around 18% by May.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
Now say something about this water heater. Do you have any information about that?
Oh, yes, I've got an illustration of a water tank here.
Well, that's good, but you'll have to describe it.
Right. Well, the ideal water tank in the UK has a capacity of 45 to 50 litres, but must be at least 40 litres to be effective. The solar coil is put in the bottom of the tank to heat the water. Now remember that solar heated water will not get quite as hot as fossil fuel water heaters. The bottom half of the tank is normally 20 degrees, and this is why it is important not to have a tank that is too large, as that would take too much energy to heat. In this illustration, it rises to 40 degrees from halfway up. Don't forget that hot water rises, so the top third of the tank is the hottest and reaches an average temperature of 65 degrees.
And what's this second layer around the tank?
Oh, that's insulation. Because the tank is often either outside or just under the roof, rigid foam is used as an insulation layer. It should be at least 80 millimetres thick all around.
Well, that seems like a good presentation. All you need to do is to prepare some short notes and a larger illustration so you can use it as a demonstration and you'll be fine.
Oh, you think so? Well, thanks very much for the help. Maybe I could do the same for you one day.
Maybe. Anyway, I have to go. Good luck.
Thanks. Bye.
That is the end of part two.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now turns to part three.
Part three.
You will hear a radio program in which the speakers discuss the importance of looking after old people in winter.
First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Now listen and answer the questions.
Nobody likes cold weather, but for old people, it can be particularly uncomfortable and dangerous. They can become cold without even noticing it. To keep warm, they may need help from friends and neighbors like you. To find out how we can help, we've invited a representative from the Social Service Department at the Town Hall to talk about the Winter Warmth Code campaign. Mr. Hastings, can I first ask you why it is so important to keep an eye on elderly people during cold weather such as we've been having lately?
Yes. There are two main reasons. First, the old suffer from the cold more than the rest of us. They're not as active or strong as you and me, and it's harder for them to keep warm. This can lead to all sorts of complications. They have less resistance to infection. The quality of their lives is badly affected, and in extreme cases, they may need to be hospitalized.
According to the newspapers, old people are actually dying of the cold. Is this true?
I'm afraid it is. I said before there were two main reasons why we should keep an eye on old people. Well, the other major problem is that so many pensioners cannot afford to heat their homes properly.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
They may already be living in difficult circumstances. Then, in an exceptionally cold winter such as this one, they may just not have enough money to pay for the extra heating necessary.
It seems terrible that in a society such as ours, this should be happening.
It is. And what the Winter Warmth Code campaign aims to do is to bring this problem to the attention not only of the government, but of everybody else in society. We all have a duty towards our old people to make sure that they do not suffer in this cold weather.
So now to the practical side of things. What can we do to help?
Well, we all know someone old, a relative maybe, a neighbor, someone living round the corner. We should adopt that person and make sure that we spare a few minutes every day to check that everything is okay. Make sure, even if the old person is not actually ill, that he or she is not suffering. Check when you go inside that the house or flat doesn't feel cold to you. It's a good idea to try to feel some part of their body, like their face or hands. Old people can become cold without even noticing it, you know.
Okay. And if a person is too poor to afford to heat the house or flat?
The best thing, then, is for the old person to live in one room only and to make sure that that one room is warm. Check that the bed is on an inside wall. Move it yourself if necessary. Check the room for drafts. A lot of cold air gets into the room through old windows or badly fitting doors.
Is food important?
Yes. Make sure that the old person is eating well. You could help by cooking for them or doing the shopping. Remember, a good hot meal a day makes a big difference. Also, make sure that they are well dressed. Old people need to wear more layers of clothes than we do, particularly at night.
One last question, Mr. Hastings. Is there nothing the state can do to help?
Oh, yes, indeed. Contact your town hall to find out about local organizations already involved in this kind of work. If there is a local Meals on Wheels service, for instance, you could get your adopted old person on the list. Then, of course, there are also many state benefits which an old person could be entitled to, and which he or she doesn't know about, and which therefore he or she is not claiming. An extra problem here is that it can often be complicated, and old people don't like going to Social Security offices to fill in forms and all that. You can help by finding out for them what possibilities exist for claiming a little extra money from the government, then applying for it for them. That little extra could make all the difference.
Yes, indeed. Well, Mr. Hastings, thank you for coming in and talking to us today.
Thank you.
That is the end of part three.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.
Now it turns to part four.
Part four. You will hear an interview about why conservation groups, such as Greenpeace, are interested in protecting whales.
First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 40. Now, listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 40.
We hear a lot these days about whales and the need to protect them. But when did this interest start? Because people have been hunting whales for centuries, haven't they?
Yes, for at least 1,000 years. And there were no problems until this century, really. What happened was that fishing technology became much more efficient and the ships were much faster, so more and more whales were caught. In the 1960s, the main whaling countries were killing more than 60,000 whales a year, and I think everyone began to realise that something had to be done.
When did the killing begin to slow down?
It was quite a slow process, and it was the environmental groups like Greenpeace that really made things change. I mean, they set out to make people aware of the fact that whales were fast becoming extinct. But even now, we don't know if this interest has come too late. If you take the great blue whale, for example, which at 30 or 40 meters long is the biggest animal there has ever been, now there are perhaps about 2,000 or so left. In fact, they have been protected for quite a long time, but there is still no sign that their population is growing.
Am I right in thinking that killing whales is against the law?
Yes. In fact, there was an international agreement to stop killing whales, but there are three countries which still catch whales, and they are Iceland, Norway, and Japan. In fact, under the international agreement, they're allowed to catch whales for scientific research, and they use this as an excuse to carry on as they did before.
What do they use the whale for?
In Japan, it's quite a popular kind of food, and it's very traditional.
That is the end of part four.
You now have half a minute to check your answers.